I've never seen a diamond in the flesh. I cut my teeth on wedding rings in the movies, and I'm not proud of my address.
We're not just building muscle, we're building men. In the quiet hours, in the unfiltered moments, in the conversations that happen before the world wakes up. This is The Gloom, where brotherhood forms in the dark so we can lead in the light, where vulnerability is strength and leadership is handed from man to man, one story at a time. Our mission is to empower, exhort, and inspire men to achieve their best selves through stories of reinvigorated male community leadership. We bring you weekly interviews with F3 Omaha PACs, ordinary men doing extraordinary things in fitness, fellowship, faith, and leadership, because we believe that every man has a story, and reinvigoration starts when that story is shared. This is The Glue in the Gloom. Shout out to our sponsors, Avior Wealth Management, Liberty Core Real Estate, Major Team Mortgage, Exclusively Eye Care, Omaha Laser Dentistry, and McNamara Law Firm. We appreciate your support.
Hey, are you the type of guy that likes to get up early in the winter to battle your jester? Do you love listening to people drone on and on and on about COVID in the gloom? Would you trust your vision to a guy nicknamed Cataracts? Well, if the answer to any of these questions is yes, fellas, you have bigger problems than you think. Dr. Cataracts, aka Dr. Wolf, can't solve all of your problems, but he can certainly help you solve the problems related to your eye health and vision. You will find many F3 principles throughout his practice. Check him out today at Exclusively Eye Care.
Now, let's get back to the gloom. Okay. All right, and we're back. We're at the Nomad in downtown Elkhorn, and I know guys have heard me say that, but just a beautiful building, and we're just grateful to be here. We finally are back in our studio with the windows, and they look nice. I think we got some natural light, and I'm super excited for this interview. I've really been looking forward to this with my man Mayday. Has just been a guy, I would just say, I sort of want to be like you in many areas. You know, we've had good conversations about being a sort of urban farmer, I don't know if you would call it that, but also really successful in your the business world. Obviously, recent site Q at probably the best Wednesday AO.
There's no probably about it.
Known to man, right? But I'm super excited, like I said, to just hear your story, and would love to just kind of hear kind of that backstory, like pre-F3, what was going on, and then talk me through kind of the EH journey and first workout stuff.
Yeah. Well, I think directly back to kind of the EH story was, we had, my wife and I, we lived on our acreage for the last 15 years. And 2 years ago, we had embarked on a long-awaited and long-overdue remodel project where we completely gutted and completely and totally started kind of with a blank slate.
Oh, wow.
And we did this with all of our kids kind of in the house / in the camper, basement, two-year-old, the whole thing. So it was a very stressful 2 years. We had some contractor issues. So I ended up doing a lot more of the work than I had expected. And so we were doing all of that. And it was sun up to sundown, 12-hour days for a very long period of time. And I was nearing the end of that. And I remember looking at my wife and said, I'm kind of nervous about who I am or what I'm going to do when this project's over. Like those sorts of projects kind of just feed me. The physical labor part of it, seeing something before and then doing the work and seeing it after is very fulfilling. And so we were kind of winding that down. And I was kind of at this point where we get done with a long day, we'd have a drink. And we've probably started doing, I probably started doing that 3 or 4 days a week. And I remember very specifically reaching out, because I was like, I got to find something to do. I was researching like different workouts, different gyms, all these, CrossFit, all of this stuff, trying to find something. And I remember texting Pantyhose because he has this Halloween party every year that we've gone to, and they brought it up years in the past. I'm like, no way, that's too early. No way. So I texted him and I said, hey, I'm going to give you a call after work today so we can talk about this morning workout thing you do. Because I really didn't know really anything other than they got up early and worked out. And he said, and I have the text and I saved it as, you know, I'll do you one better. He's like, show up here tomorrow morning, 5:15, happened to be the berm.
Okay.
And I showed up and I mean, from start to finish, it was just wild. I mean, we showed up in the dark and there's guys running in from off the pond. Yeah. And I was like, people run before this. And we hopped right into it. And I tell people this joke, because I think it's just so wild. Like, we were a bunch of guys, it's dark out. Toto was leading. We're running around the tennis courts, and we stopped in a corner and we're doing pickle pushers and monkey humpers in the dark with a bunch of dudes I'd never met before.
Yeah.
And so it was just, the whole thing was hilarious and wild. Circled up, Toto did the whole, you know, naming thing, and the rest is kind of history. But
wow,
it was quite a ride.
And so the name Mayday, where does that come from? Or what did you say that made us land on that?
Yeah, so when I was in high school, I grew up on a farm, Northwest Iowa. My dad was he worked our tails off. And so I had this mantra that you work hard, play hard. And we played really hard. I hung out with a lot of farm kids whose fathers were the same way. Just work them hard. And the second they got a chance to run to town and goof off, we did. And we partied hard. So I'd wrecked some vehicles, kind of gotten in, you know, my dad was like, dude, I got to straighten this kid out somehow. Blah, blah. So as a bonding thing, my dad had this ultralight airplane, and that was his stress relay. You know, he's like, I need to release stress. So I'm going to hop in this airplane, fly around, release stress.
It's like a two-seater kind of thing?
Two-seater, yeah. So one person, and then the other person sits in the back if two are flying.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so it's, yeah, kind of sit in tandem. The prop is, the wing sits above you, and the prop is behind you.
Okay.
So I'd gotten, he's like, you know, it's going to be a bonding thing. We're going to fly together. And so I had gotten lessons. I learned to solo on it, so I was flying. So one day, I was flying along, and I buzzed a buddy of mine's house, like, right above the ground. And I was climbing out of that, probably 150 feet off the ground. And completely randomly, the back seat cushion, because it was empty, flew out of the plane and hit the prop.
Oh,
and it got hooked onto the prop long enough that the prop hit the tail. The prop broke into 100 pieces.
Oh my God.
So there was this, you know, huge shaking. And I look back and I'm like, oh shit.
Because
there was just styrofoam, like the cushy stuff, just everywhere in the sky. Well, they teach you when you lose power in an airplane to, you know, see where you can land, get the nose down to keep your airspeed up.
Yeah.
I put the nose down, gravel road over here, but there's electrical lines going two different directions. So that was a no-go.
Yeah.
So the only thing I could do was kind of turn to the right a little bit. And when you turn in an airplane without power, you kind of fall out of the sky.
Yeah.
So I stuck it right in an alfalfa field right there.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. And you lived to tell the story.
Yeah. I didn't even get really that hurt. I threw the seat buckles off, and then I walked, there was a house probably 150 yards away. I walked over there and I called my dad, and needless to say, I mean, I had wrecked a couple of vehicles up to that point, and now it's airplane. Plane.
Yeah.
So I was,
oh my gosh. What was his response? Did he?
You know, we'll just skip that.
Appropriate for, yeah.
Yeah. Thank goodness for my mother, who kind of helped mediate that whole thing. But, you know, obviously he was grateful that I was alive, but
sure.
It was a very stressful, you know, in the hog industry, late 90s.
Yeah.
Not a good time. So I just added to the stress level at home for a bit.
So. Oh, man. Wait, so was your dad a, like, Air Force guy, or he just kind of learned to fly as a hobby and then
literally a hobby. There was a guy in our hometown that had some of these ultralights, and from an entry level perspective, you know, you could get into that hobby. You know, I'm not saying it's cheap, but surprisingly inexpensively. Yeah. And we had had he had always had this desire, and he needed that, you know, as a stress outlet. That was a great thing. You know, some guys play golf, but that was his deal. And because like he said, when you're up there, you got to think about flying. There's not a whole lot of room for other thoughts. You got to think about all the things that can go wrong and stuff like that. So,
There's this guy, Craig Groeschel. I don't know if you've ever heard of him. He's a pastor, but also does this leadership podcast, and he got his pilot's license in the last year or whatever. He's a instrument rated pilot.
Yeah.
He's always talking about things that he learned as a pilot, like sort of that apply to leadership, like checking your instruments and how do you fly in, you know, in the clouds and some of, you know, so there's a lot of really cool aviation stuff. Do you still, could you still fly today? Have you kept up your
licensing?
Or
so right after that happened, my instructor, Earl Dreyer was his name. He took me right back up. And he said, look, we got to get, like, literally within an hour, he's like, we got to hop in a bird and get back up there. And so he took me north of Lamar's, Iowa, where I grew up. And we got up to like somewhere around like 1500 feet in the air. And he shut the plane off and he said, land it.
Okay.
And so, you know, I just circled and I circled, and there was this kind of farm that had a driveway that was, I don't know, maybe 10 foot wide. And I don't know how long, but I landed and he said, I think you're good to go. So it was that, but that was the last time I flew, because, you know, then life happened, you know, for one, it took him a lot of months to reconstruct the plane.
Right. I'm sure.
So, oh man. Yeah. And then I, you know, go back to college and then life unfolds here from there. So, would I someday? Absolutely. Especially that sort of flying. It's just, it is so nice. So cool.
Yeah.
So
I had a buddy of mine that was getting his pilot's license, and he offered to take me on a flight, and he was doing a bunch of those like stop and goes where he'd cut the engine or, you know, he didn't tell me until we were about like, you know, 30 minutes into it that he's like, well, this is great, 'cause in order to get my license, I have to have a certain number of hours with a passenger. And I'm sort of thinking like, oh no,
you get to be
you're
guy.
Still in training. So my wife was not too happy with me that I did that, but well, it's awesome. So you grew up on a farm. Mm-hmm. So is that, talk me through like from a, I guess what we would call fitness or like physical health standpoint, do you feel like doing all that work growing up on a farm, like sort of physical activity was always something that was a part of your life?
Yeah. I mean, so absolutely. And I think in a lot of ways, you know, part of where we're at as a country is, you know, there's just not a lot of, we've gone from doing a lot of industrial type, you know, outside work and not, as a country, used to be so fit because everybody kind of had to be working out every day. So now we have to find fitness things to do.
Yeah.
I mean, because they don't do it anymore, but we used to walk beans every summer. So, you know, if we had 1500 acres of ground, we, you know, roughly half of that would be in soybeans, and we'd have to walk and pull all the weeds amongst, you know, 500 to 700 acres. And that was what we did every summer. And, you know, we had pretty good sized hog operation. And it was a huge part of every day was being outside and working. So, I was in very, very good shape in high school. And then,
Did you play sports too, or did you not have time really? Or?
Oh yeah. I mean, we could never do the summer sports 'cause we had too much work to do, but you know, high school, played football all the way through, ran track except for my senior year, I basically just played football, and then I goofed off and partied. That was my,
That's what you're supposed to do, right?
Yeah.
That's what I always thought. Were you pretty good at football? Like, would you?
Oh, play? Yeah. You know, as a team, I'll boil down to team wise. Yes. I mean, I think my sophomore year in high school, we were state champions, class 1A. So it's not a huge school.
Yeah.
We were runner up junior year. We were number one in the state my senior year, but lost 3-0 first round of the playoffs.
Oh,
so
man.
That was a crushing defeat. But I mean, I went out, I played, I was in great shape. Was I the most, you know, athletic or great? No. I mean, I wouldn't put my accolades up
there.
What'd
you play? What position were you?
Wing back.
Okay.
Yeah. So I tell people this mostly to show how much we ran the ball, but I was the leading receiver on our team, but I had 48 yards. I blocked a lot.
Yeah.
I blocked a lot.
Yeah. So. Oh, that's cool. I always love hearing, you know, just where guys come into it. Yeah. So you come to this workout with these guys, and it's super odd because it's all these, you know, inappropriate exercise moves in the dark.
Right? Yeah.
Was it difficult for you? You feel like, was it from a fitness standpoint, were you like, okay, this is what I needed, or is that kind of what you were looking for?
Yeah. I mean, aspects, because I had come off of that remodel, I was in pretty good shape because I was going up and down ladders and carrying heavy stuff. And I was very active throughout that whole remodel. The area from a fitness standpoint that I've always struggled with, like the cardio, the running stuff.
Yeah.
You know, to this day, I tell everybody and joke, like I run, I don't know, 10 to 20 miles a week, roughly. I'm okay with about the first 5 steps and the last 5 steps, but everything in between is not,
just
I don't enjoy it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know if not enjoy it's the way to put it, but I just start.
Yeah.
That's why I like running around Bennington Lake. There's something about getting all the way around it, but there's a lot of mental battles that happen from the start to the end of that run.
Yeah. It's interesting. I don't know that I tried to do cross country in high school one time, and I was a baseball player, so we didn't run a lot, and cross country was a challenge, but now I love it. Like nothing I would rather do, but
yeah.
What do you remember, like, your second post? Do you remember where that was at?
Well, so if I was Berm was Thursday, I think I do remember going to Badger Point the Tuesday afterwards, and then I did go to Paradise, as I believe that's how it went. Because I think I was a little sore kind of after that first one. Then I went to Badger, and then I went to Paradise. Yeah.
What, but right away, it sounds like you were sort of like, yeah, this is something, this is kind of what I was looking for.
Oh, 100%. I was all in very, very early on. Yeah.
Why do you think that? Do you just had what you were looking for? Or?
Yeah. I mean, so a big part of, I adapted quickly to the early rise, like that, that did not, wasn't a deterrent. I loved being around guys, and most people that know me, I don't say a whole lot, you know, even when I'm out there, but just hearing the banter back and forth and hearing guys laugh about stuff, like, and I laugh at, you know, some of the stupidest stuff, but that's a huge thing that just, you know, I think it's pretty easy to get on an island, get kind of isolated and not have that sort of be around that sort of environment. And I think it's been huge. And some of the stuff we laugh about is just ridiculous, but on the flip side, there's stuff that we talk about that's, you know, really heavy and really, you know, I mean, good to talk about, good, you know, supportive, all that sort of thing too. So that it's kind of the emotional part of it. That's been very, very good and surprising.
Yeah. I think, so you had Paradise in your first like couple days or couple posts. Did you go to Q Source, and what was that like? Or did you not, you weren't doing coffee yet then?
Yeah. At that point, on those, cause you know, we were in kind of the school year. So yeah, my very first post at Paradise, I believe Red Ranger was the queue. And he's like, we're just going to do a 20 minute out and back. And I was like, what does that mean? So it means we're going to run for 20 minutes straight. We're going to turn around and come back. That stretch back was brutal. But at that point, that's when I met Slow Pitch. He kind of told me his whole story. And I was fortunate to learn very early on what this is really all about. I mean, there's so much more to this than just the fitness part of it. But I struggled and I bitched the whole time about that last 2 miles in. But
was that the one where Red Ranger tried to do like 5 miles in the, there was one queue I feel like he had at Paradise where he tried to get more miles in the workout, right?
Well, I don't know. I would think by the time, if I'm recalling right, we were out, I don't think we had quite made it, maybe 2 miles out, which is about that 20 minute mark out.
Yeah.
And they were so, like, they were out of sight, like way, way ahead of, because we ran along that, whatever that, Papio Spillway Creek or whatever they call that. Yeah. I would have no doubt in my mind he made it. He probably got every bit of five. Yeah. He can move.
Well, so I'd be curious. So you've been in F3 now for 3 years?
I'll be October 19th. So my 2 year, I'm going to cue the berm. It's as close as I could find to the 2 year. So.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah.
So 2 years coming up, do you feel like you've made progress on the kind of first step? Like, what have been some of the improvements you feel like you've seen?
Well, without a doubt. I mean, I think there's a lot more things physically that I could do than even when I felt like I was in really good shape in high school. Because that would have been my prior kind of physical peak when I was lifting and all that sort of thing. I remember running more than 3 miles once in high school, and I walked part of it. Maybe I went out too hot. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I know from that I'm a lot mentally stronger now on the running side of things. Physically, other than, you know, I'm 45 now. So there's parts of me that's not as trim as I used to be.
Yeah.
But I feel for this stage, I would have never imagined being in this good of shape at this age. Yeah. Never would imagine it.
So. What would you say has been helpful, like with the running side? Cause I know a lot of guys maybe would like to run more, but struggle still.
You know, it's always helpful. I can think of the 2 years, near 2 years that I've been doing this, I can think I've maybe run by myself maybe twice as a pre-run that maybe that nobody came to, but otherwise there's always somebody else.
Yeah.
And that really matters.
Yeah.
That dramatically improves that first five steps. Cause once you get those in, you're moving and you're off. And so, and some days I feel like maybe I am turning into a runner. The last couple of weeks have been a struggle, but I just kind of pushing through it. It's I know it kind of comes back. So having other guys to run with, I wouldn't do this by myself. I wouldn't just wake up and I'm going to go for a run today.
Yeah. I used to do that. But it was more of like a substitute for drugs and alcohol. And then as I've gotten further away from my clean date, it is harder to go by myself.
Yeah.
You know? Some of it's a fear of mountain lions, you know, I think is my other irrational. That's which funny. Is weird. Yeah. Yeah. But so do you feel like, have you done like queen service or any of that other stuff as you think about kind of the queen or working on those things? Or are you not interested in?
Oh, I'm very interested. In fact, we just talked about this morning. We do our shield lock on Thursday mornings.
Oh, cool.
And we just brought this up this morning. I had to shamefully admit that I'm a fast food junkie. And I know the drive-through guy at McDonald's close to my office.
Oh, no way.
So well that he brought his tomatoes in to show me one day. And that's not something I'm proud of.
Yeah. But that says a lot. You're pretty close.
Yeah. I mean, well, yeah.
It's like a neighbor, right?
Right. Yeah. I said, should he age the guy? Because he's super nice. But yeah, like I would see him so frequently that we had gotten to know each other. And that's a problem.
What do you get at McDonald's that you like?
Like, whatever. You know, I was trying to pin down what it is about, you know, the bad part about having my office, my office is Miracle Hill. So,
okay.
Yeah, 120th and Miracle Hills Drive. And so you walk out the door every day and
you
can smell something like, and sometimes I just need to get out of the office and just go somewhere. And unfortunately I don't chew salads every day. I choose
fries.
That's my jester. We determined this morning that's my jester. And that is who I must go to war with.
That is good. That's what, a recent Whetstone episode, Dredd mentioned, like, that's one of the hardest ones. And I was thinking like, I've never put like intentional steps in place to work through that. I've always been trying to like out king my queen, as they say. I don't know, as I'm working out less, just with more kids, I'm kind of thinking like, okay, I should probably look at that.
For sure.
And it's probably more than just intermittent fasting. And it's probably also more than just like, because what I'd like to do is like, well, I'll just drink a bunch of protein shakes, right? I'll just have like let's do the old slim fast, like a shake for lunch and a sensible dinner. But I never eat a sensible dinner.
Yeah. I mean, I think about all the ways that things would be easier if I would do a better job of fueling my body. I mean, I think all the running and working out would become easier, my energy levels, all those sort of things. But yeah, I think the fact that we landed on that this morning and so the first step is figuring it, you know, pointing it out.
Well, you got to admit it.
Yeah. Admit it. Yeah. And it's it. Now the world knows that I'm a McDonald's fast food.
You got a while until this airs. So you can, people won't
hopefully
know.
I can get right by then.
Yeah. What, I would be curious too, cause you also still farm, right?
Yeah.
You still have hogs and chickens, and I guess talk us through the current like farm operation.
Yeah, as it stands right now, so I live on 10 acres east of Bennington, and so at this moment we have 3 steers, 14
cow, right?
That's male castrated cow. Yeah.
Okay.
And so 3 of those, and then we had 15 pigs. We have 14 now because I brought one to the butcher on Wednesday. Yeah.
Oh, you're at the workout.
Yeah, we have a pig roast at our house on every fall. And so that's this coming Saturday. So nice. 14 pigs. In the fall, we do 100 broiler chickens. So the meat birds, they take about 8 weeks. And so they'll be done next Friday. We'll take those in to get processed. And then somewhere around 20 to 24 laying hens.
Okay.
So
eggs. So you could, do you eat like basically from what your farm has?
Yeah, I mean, any, we don't, maybe 1% of all the meat that we get is store-bought. We eat all our, so I have four freezers down in my basement filled with beef, pork, and chicken.
Yeah. You could just eat that for every meal, right?
Yeah. I mean, if I could discipline myself to, you know, cause it is all so good. And like I said, most of the time I do pretty good, but there's stretches where I don't.
I love it. We could talk about that. I'm just super jealous because I would like to have a farm, but I just can't get buy-in from the boss at home.
Well, ours all started with one Saturday. I was on Craigslist and I saw this guy had advertised these pigs, and I just bought them without asking talking to. And I was like, guess what? We had no pens. We had no, like, we weren't even ready for them, but you got to just buy before you're ready.
Right. And then you have no choice. Right?
Yeah.
How do you do all of that with, cause you've got a full-time job.
Six.
Six kids.
Yeah.
And then you've got all of this. I mean, you just.
So they do all of it. Kind of, you know, steer the ship, so to speak, but my oldest is 17, and then I've got almost 16. So 17, 15, 13, 11, 7, and 4. Like girls drive the tractor, they haul water to the pigs or the cows. Yeah. And one of my kids is in charge of the broilers. Another one is in charge of the layers. So I just basically go outside, you know, after we'll have supper, we'll go outside. I just kind of watch to make nothing goes, because these are living creatures. You can't just
Right.
So. But they do all of it.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And they're into it apparently, right?
Yeah. I mean, they have their grumblings and all that sort of, but they also have moments where you can just tell that it's, you know, it's kind of landing. They're kind of getting the bigger picture.
Yeah. You'll have to help me get started. Maybe I'll buy a couple of pigs from you. And then,
Well, and people ask me like, you make money and all. I was like, no, we absolutely, there's no way to, I mean, it would take some serious scale to make this work, but it's what I tell the kids is you're paying tuition, that you're, this is a learning experience. That's what 100% what this is all about.
Yeah. Well, and I think, I was listening to, Dr. Meg Meeker, right? This like child psychiatrist. Yeah. She's written a couple books.
I think I've listened to one.
And she was talking about the value of giving your kids responsibility and sort of that sense of like contribution to the greater good and to the family. Mm-hmm. And so to me, like, that's what ultimately, like, they're seeing like, oh, okay, I put in some effort, and then this, you know, there's sort of fruits of my labor kind of thing that they're getting, which is super cool.
Yeah. And you know, my wife and I both grew up on farms, so when we started having kids, we started looking, that's how we ended up where we did. And part of this was like just not knowing any different. We both had the experiences. I grumbled all the time as a kid about power washing a hog building or whatever it was, walking beans, all that stuff. But I look back at it as some of the fondest years of my life. And, you know, it's, to me, it's in the way we raise our kid is a compliment to how our parents raised us, that it was so enriching and filled us with so much gratitude and purpose that, we're doing our best to impart that in our kids.
Yeah.
Right.
I love it. Well, I'm going to try to copy you on that.
I can just drop a couple of pigs off one day.
Yeah, see what happens. I'm going to say, hey, I interviewed this guy and then he gave me a couple of pigs. And my wife will be like, oh, one more reason I can't stand that. No. Yeah. Well, so talk me through. So we're kind of talking about this fellowship piece, right? Because we got the Concentrica and your family, but back us up a little bit. So you came into the group, you knew Pantyhose. Mm-hmm. Were there other guys there that you knew? You're pretty well connected, I feel like.
Yeah. I mean, I would say there's guys that so Pantyhose I knew the best. I mean, our oldest daughters are very, very good friends. Now we don't hang out like every weekend or anything like that. We know each other through church. And I've always looked at him as someone, he carries himself really well. He's got this humble, you know, his unassuming leadership. Like, he just carries himself really well. I've always respected that about him. And others I've gotten to know, and it's like Chucky and Nailed It, Birdman. Those guys all go to our church too, and so you see them around more. And so what F3 did basically was kind of expose myself, you know, me to them more often, because I'm not as like, we don't go out a lot.
You don't have time.
Yeah, you really don't. Yeah. And so so this is all kind of new territory even still.
Yeah it's so cool just to hear, you know, sort of taking those acquaintances to now building more friendships.
Yeah, you know? It is.
How did you go about like getting to know other guys? I guess one thing to kind of go back, why'd you go to Paradise on that first Wednesday? Did somebody pull you down there and say, hey, you should come over here? That's close to your...
At that time, that from a Wednesday site perspective, so there was Catalyst or Paradise that was even within a, you know, shooting distance from my house. And
yeah.
It really only takes me like 12 or 13 minutes from my house because of the roads I get on.
Yeah.
And so I went on to the F3 Nation thing. Once I kind of had a couple days under my belt, I'm like, what other sites? Where can I go?
Mm-hmm.
I may have even shot that past pantyhose, but basically that was the Wednesday site.
Yeah.
It was close. And, you know, again, slow pitches credit, retweet. I remember one day, I think the second time I went there, he's like, why'd you come to Paradise today? I was like, well, I hate running. I literally said that exactly. And he just kind of smirked, but it, you know, I that is kind of why I went. It's like, I'm trying to push through something that's hard, you know, for me. And then, yeah, he was really good about, you know, running with me. Tight lip was always really, really good.
Yeah.
Me being in the back and he'd run and visit. Yeah. So all those guys, I feel like I have a kind of that bond with just because they hung with me and
Was coffee ever something you were able to do, or at what point did you sort of say, okay, I'm going to see what this is all about?
Yeah. So I know, you know, a couple of the guys had talked about it. The hardest part for me, and at least initially, was that I had to hurry up and get back and take kids to school. Mm-hmm. But once we kind of established some rhythm with, you know, at home, then I could stick around for coffee. And so I just remember, I'm going to forget the chapter, but I remember going with not really an idea about what we were doing. Like, I didn't know that there was kind of an agenda, so to speak. I showed up and they were just talking about things and guys were just sharing experiences from a business perspective, personal perspective on this topic. I'm like, well, this is really awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, I joke, you know, it's fun to go to coffee sometimes and talk about fart jokes and all that sort of thing.
Yeah.
There's kind of a time for that. But this one, it landed home with me because it was impactful and very thought provoking. And, you know, I left there and I was thinking about it and I just kept going. And then I got the book and I learned I couldn't read, like just sitting down and reading Q Source would be a brutal
endeavor. It'd be a tough read. Yeah.
But breaking it down chapter by chapter, having been through it, I mean, I'm through kind of second time now, haven't been here long enough that we talk about the same chapter, but it's different perspectives. Like I could see I'm plan on going for the foreseeable future. It's that good.
Well, now you got Crucible that you can go to as well. So you got multiple Wednesday AOs. Talk me through kind of the shield lock piece and kind of how did that come about and what's been the impact of having a shield lock?
Yeah. So I'm going to get this wrong we're probably 6 months into it. Milk Carton reached out to me and asked about Grab and Lunch. I'm like, oh, sure. He's been seeing him a lot out in the Bennington sites, that sort of thing. So we had lunch and he just kind of dropped it on me that he'd want to do it. And I was like, gosh, yes. I mean, I didn't know him that well, but I know, you know, the kind of the impact he's had right out of the gate. He's been all in. He's just been a great, great, great guy. I was also like, how many guys did you have lunch with before me? It's like,
But where am I at on your list?
But it's been good. And then while we were in that lunch, you know, we talked about who else would be a good addition to that. And so Spokes was, you know, very, very much on the forefront. You know, I think where we work is, like work together well is we're all very, very well driven towards dialing up all three.
Yeah.
You know, we, you know, so the fellowship part of having coffee every Thursday morning after a beat down, we kind of jump around a little bit. We're all trying, you know, faith is a huge part of our lives and none of us are where we want to be. So we're trying to dial that up. And then, fitness, like anything else, like all three aspects of them, if you're not adding logs to those fires, they're going to go out. So, and we're all aligned in that respect.
Did you EH Spokes?
I did.
You did. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So at this, pig roast that I have every year, it's kind of a church related thing. I've been really active in the Knights of Columbus.
Yeah.
Active in our church and this will be the 11th year. So having this thing. this year, last couple of years, we just started inviting other couples kind of outside of the nights, just but in the parish. And, yeah. and people were trying to just, we try to surround ourselves with people that are kind of like-minded, like from a how we raise our families, how we instill faith in our families. And I'd seen spokes across the church, gosh, at least year, maybe two. And Wendy even said, like, we should invite them. Yeah. They have they're Iowa State fans. So we kind of knew just a little about them. Long story short, we invited them. They came over. Pantyhose was there because he's in the Knights and in St. Vincent. And as the night kind of wore on, we just said, hey, you need to come. And he's been all in from right out of the gate. So
the pig roast, just if I'm hearing correctly, it's all people from Iowa, Knights of Columbus, and go to your church. No, I'm kidding.
It's a very, very specific group of people that we invite.
Pantyhose is also from Iowa, right?
Yeah, he is. Yeah. So you're not completely wrong. But there are some Nebraska.
Milk's not from Iowa, though, is he?
Milk Spokes? Kind? Oh, Milk's not. No.
No, he's not. You can tell. He doesn't have the Iowa accent. No, I love it. That's so cool. And how cool, at least in my experience, I think you kind of hesitate to like do the shield lock thing, but I've been in three different shield locks now and would just say like you kind of sometimes life happens and you kind of make some changes, right? Like the first one I was in, I moved way out of town, and then with just that proximate piece we didn't have, and then other ones just we were in different phases of life. And I think just keep trying to find that, you know. Yeah. I think eventually you will land with what feels really good, and you kind of keep making progress. Yeah. You hear about like Dredd, you know, you hear about like Dredd's shield lock that's been around for 10 years or however long. And you're like, man, that would be really cool. But just being able to have a group of guys that you can just kind of run things by is just super helpful. So that's cool that you just did that.
Yeah. And so far it's been really good. You know, we're maybe age-wise, a little older than, but Spokes has got a big family. He's going on 6 kids now and Milk from a proximity, he's close. We're all very, I would say, very, very closely aligned in a lot of ways. And
super cool.
Yeah, it's been really good. Yeah.
What else, you know, when you think about, so Q-Source, right? Have you read Free to Lead? I'm assuming that was somewhere in the.
Yeah, Pantyhose gave me his copy and I read it. And I kind of laugh because I think they talk about the age 43 in there a lot. It's been a couple of years since I read it, but I was 43 at the time when I read it. Really? So I was like, oh, this all sounds familiar.
It lines up. Yeah.
Yeah.
What and so Q-Source, right? Obviously, you think about that. Talk us through, you know, for maybe guys that haven't gone to a Q-Source, what do you see as sort of the benefit when you can kind of get guys around the table? You kind of touched on this, but maybe a little bit more on what do you think guys get out of that when they go to a Q-Source or another book study?
Yeah. I think the book does a really good job, like the four main quadrants about get right, lead right, like all it walks you through, and you can hop in any place, but I feel like it does a good job because I think everybody finds themselves at that moment in a certain part of it, even though all of it applies all the time, really. Mm-hmm. But it gets you thinking about, okay, I'm here now. Like as I think of myself right now, 2 years in, been through it a couple of times. I'm mostly getting right most of the time. Leading right is something I can always learn, but there are aspects down the road about like legacy. I think about that a lot now. I don't know if it's just I'm getting older, but I feel like that is a big thing I'm thinking about a lot. And so, no matter where you are in life, that book applies. And I feel like for the overwhelming majority of men that do F3 in any capacity, we're all trying to get better in some way. And to me, that's kind of a good guide to areas that you can improve, areas they're weak on, that sort of thing. So,
Yeah, I love it. And I would fully agree. I think it's just, you learn so much from those other perspectives, right? I mean, that's some of the reason we started this podcast, right? And you know, I was thinking about, we interviewed Billboard recently, and he does this thing where he writes like his five most important things on his mirror in the bathroom. And one of them is like the number of days until his oldest kid is out of the house. And so you just like, you pick up on all these things where you're like, you know, so I think it's the hard part is to not get overwhelmed with all the ways that you could be improving. Right.
And
that's where I've struggled, but What, you know, what else, when you think about the fellowship piece, where else have you kind of found your groove, or kind of found the ability to accelerate there?
Yeah, you know, I'll own that a weakness of mine, and I've gotten better at it. I'm terrible about texting and like reaching out to guys. I've gotten better. Like, I've sent more texts out probably in the last 2 or 3 months. It's something I've tried to do post, you know, handing off the flag at Paradise,
yeah.
Reaching out to a couple guys, trying to run with the six whenever I can, because somebody did it for me. But I'm not naturally inclined to just be like outgoing and that sort of thing. So that's kind of a battle I have. I love being around guys. I wouldn't say that I'm good at it.
Sure. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't think you're alone there. I think we hear a lot of guys where it's like, it's hard, you know, and maybe that's why F3 works. Cause we have, you know, it's already organized, right? You don't have to go and like invite a bunch of people, right? You just kind of got to show up.
Yeah. Well, and I've, you know, it's neat sometimes when there's, you know, 20, 30, 40, even the flag passes when there's 60, 70 people there, that those are kind of neat every once in a while. But I'll take, you know, running in a blizzard. We had a run in at Paradise. There was four of us that showed up.
Yeah.
I would take a morning like that, or that we had one at Bullpen where it was like a negative 20 and like five of us. I love those where it is smaller, because it just feels more, it's easier to interact.
Well, that's ultimately the point, right? I'm remembering too, the one we were at Badger, and it was you and me and
Cheap Seats running. Yeah.
And it was like perfect weather until we rounded the school right about at the flag. And then it just like started pouring down. Right? Then we went and got lightning, coffee, and the tornado
hail,
and
yeah.
What's it like to love your dentist? Well, you're about to find out, where healthy smiles go beyond your teeth. No drilling, no needles, and no anxiety. Relax, it's Omaha Laser Dentistry. Welcome to better. At Omaha Laser Dentistry, Dr. Bullenparty uses the Soleya laser, a CO2 laser that's used in all of his day-to-day patient care. He provides thorough exams, assessments, and treatments for things like snoring, tethered tissue, and extractions like wisdom teeth, as well as other surgeries. Check them out today at omahalaserdentistry.com. Discounts may be available for F3 Omaha members.
What about, you know, so thinking about fitness, fellowship, faith, right? Kind of this third F, or the faith piece.
Yeah.
Would love to kind of hear what your journey's been like. You kind of mentioned growing up on a farm and maybe with a Catholic background, but talk us through kind of your faith journey.
Yeah. Yeah. So strong Catholic family. My dad comes from a family of nine. Mom came from a family of 10, both, you know, Catholic families, Northwest Iowa, one a farm family, one more construction family, I'll call it. So upbringing Catholic, went to Catholic school. All of that strong. Then you go to college, and nobody tells you where you have to be, or, you know, showing up on Sunday. You know, the times I went to church during college was right before a final exam that I didn't prepare for. You know, praying for that miracle. And then, as far as my faith during college, it existed, but it was way back burner. You know, and I wasn't living in a way that was that would make the good Lord proud of me. You know, I was I partied a lot. I did all that sort of thing. 2 days after my 21st birthday, I went on my first date with my wife.
Oh, wow.
And I knew very, very early on that all that other, you know, that partying lifestyle was pretty well over. I didn't want or need any part of that. And so, yeah, kind of slowly but surely, you know, the flame started to flicker alive, again. We got married in December of 2002. We were living out in Philadelphia, and I always remember this moment because it's like one of those, like moments that, that really landed for me. So we had I got a call from my mom that one of our close family friends, their oldest son, got involved in like a horrible accident. He was driving a tractor, got hit by a car on a gravel road. It was a horrible deal. He was newly married, but the thing that hit me so hard was just like, wow, this like this life is a gift.
Yeah.
The fact that I'm still breathing today, all the stupid stuff I've done in my life, life is such a gift. And I just remember that day was kind of the next starting point or kickoff point where, I mean, where did this gift of life come from? You know, I didn't create it. You know, God gave us this life, so I'm going to give it all to him at that point. And, you know, so the flame got a little brighter at that point. And then, you know, you have kids and the joy of that gift is, it's unbelievable. Like it's truly unbelievable.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that you had this moment where you kind of felt that sort of it doesn't sound like you really had like a falling out with the church. It was just sort of like kind of faded a little bit as you got into college and stuff. But to hear that spark, cool moment.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I fell into that little bit of that. I don't know if I would call it a trap, but it's, you fall into this, like, I go to church and I'm bored and I don't get it. And, you know, I'm not being entertained or fully, you know? And so what I kind of took from that, you know, thinking that along the lines of this life is a gift and, you know, I'm spiritually mature enough now to know that when I walk into church every Sunday, it's not about me.
Yeah.
That guy that's hanging up on that cross that gave up everything, that's what it's about. And so if you can surrender that pride or that ego, the whole church thing, for me, that it becomes so much more compelling and more powerful.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, that, the number of times that our own ego or pride and the thing that always is just mind boggling to me. And I've sort of come to grips with, like, I don't need to understand everything as much as I would love to understand how it all works. I can maybe ask him someday, but, like, you know, you think God created us in his image, right? To like have dominion over the world. But then sin enters in and now that's like, there's tension, right? And we basically can't live up to this full potential without surrendering, but we still have this desire to be like, to have dominion, you know? And so like this tension that sin ultimately caused, it's really hard, you know? Yeah. And I think you see guys try to do that on their own out of a place of pride and not surrender. And I know for me, when I was living that way, it really caused a lot of turmoil.
Yeah. I mean, and you take up all the examples of your life where you thought you had it figured out and you had all the knowledge and I don't need God. I don't need, you know, not all of that stuff he says is true. I'm going to do this. Well, the things that bring you true joy, all of them align with what he teaches. It's unbelievable. Sometimes you need to do some really stupid stuff sometimes to figure out that path I was heading down.
Yep.
It's pretty dark, you know?
Yeah. For sure. I would be curious. You mentioned that you're trying to accelerate all three F's, but for faith in particular, anything that's been maybe more helpful than others for you in terms of trying to really drive that one forward?
Yeah, I mean, so the hard part about, I don't know if answering that, you know, we are, you know, pretty devout Catholic. We're trying harder every day to, you know, we go to church every Sunday without fail. It doesn't matter where we are in the country or the world, we go to church. We bring the kids. We've been very diligent about protecting our suppers at night. So our kids aren't involved in a lot of activities because we don't want to give up supper around the table every night. We protect our Sundays, meaning there's not birthday parties or things like that because Sundays are protected. There's no devices, no that sort of thing. So we do that. I used to go to, COVID kind of screwed this up and I just needed to go back to Eucharistic adoration is very important in the Catholic Church. And so, and it was a huge part of kind of advancing my faith. I'd spent a lot of time in quiet prayer and, walking through the challenges of a growing family and all those sort of things. And so I do need to get back to that. So that's one of those, that's trying to work with my calendar and my staff on protecting my time a little bit, but, you talk about battles, like,
yeah,
which ones?
Yeah. I love it.
Yeah.
There's so many things. And I think in F3, right, we've got, you know, we're open to all men, right? We don't, you know, prescribe one faith system, but I think it's just cool to hear all of the different ways, right, that guys could be exploring. And, you know, I think F3 too, and I know I feel like I say this on every podcast, but just the way that we create a space for a guy with any faith background and any sort of like current challenges or searching or whatever, like, it's such a great space to just kind of learn from each other. But what one of the questions I was curious, have any of your kids come to an F3 workout?
I think at least two. Bunstown, there was one that I think Dinger I know had a hand in, because I remember his kids came. We did like a football thing on the field, so I had my three boys came. So at that time, William was probably a year ago ish so probably I had a 12, a 10, and a maybe a 6-year-old. And, and then Emmett came on his own. He's my littlest guy, 7, I think, when he came. And I admire this thing. I admire about Snare and having his two boys there, because they do an awesome job. And they're a riot, and I'd love to see my boys do the same. So
Yeah, it's a tough balance. And then when they're in school, you can't, you know, you can't really send them to school, you know, exhausted, right, from the 4 a.m. workout or whatever. But I'm sure I'll have to ask Snare when I interview him if he, it's probably this like love-hate thing where like, I love having him there, but it's also really nice when like, I get to go to work out and be with the guys. You know, when I hear you kind of tell your story, right, kind of farm kid, right, you know, and then you lived in Pennsylvania. When did you come to Omaha? Or
So got married right out of college. So my I was on the 4.5-year plan at Iowa State. My wife is a lot smarter than I am. She had the highest passing grade in organic chemistry. That's where we met, is organic chemistry and Iowa State. I had the lowest passing grade, so there's some disparity there. So I graduated 4.5 years. I never qualified for any good student discounts or anything like that. I just eked it by. She got done in 3 years undergrad, and then she went to optometry school in Philadelphia. We got married, packed up our 82 Cutlass Calais with everything we owned, moved out there, spent 2 years in Philly while she did her degree. Then we spent a year and a half in Manchester, New Hampshire. She did a, so we spent a year and a half out there. I was in golf course management at the time. So I got a, so my long story short, but my boss on this private club that I was at, they were not renewing his contract. They interviewed me to take his role, and I said, no, I mean, he's the best in the business. If you're going to do this to him at this stage, I'm just going to be the next guy that you cut because you don't like me someday. So I just said, peace out. So I sat down with our financial advisor at the time. I said, I need to do something different. And he said, you should get into this business. And like, you're not.
Which was insurance or?
It was Edward Jones, was financial services. So I went home and I told Wendy about it, and she just looked at me, because I'm like, most people don't see me when I'm covered in crap and dirt and digging holes and stuff like that. But that was very much me. And so, I interviewed, they're like, yeah, come on board. And then they said, where do you want to live? And at the worst time, we had just bought a house out there, all this stuff. So we lost our tail on that house. But we were, Omaha was the big dot on the map. It was between her parents and mine, big city, opportunities for her, for me. And so that's literally why we landed here.
That's awesome. I didn't realize that that you had lived up in the Northeast.
Aspects of it I love. I mean, New Hampshire, that was a very, if we had a lot of family in that area, that whole area is beautiful. It's so much to do and see, and a lot of really good people that we met along the way. But it's not home. I mean, we wanted to be close to family, and I give my mother-in-law a hard time and credit for this all the time, because she was like, kind of move closer to home, move closer all the time, you know, and I give her all the credit in the world for that.
And now you're here. So you've been in Omaha since?
It's 06, July 06. 06.
Okay. So a long time. So where, kind of where I was going, because when I hear your story, I'm curious what, did you also mention this, like, you know, why'd you show up to Paradise? Well, because I hate running, right? So like, you've got, you know, like a goal or something you're trying to achieve, and you're just like head on, right? And I love that. I would be curious, like, where does that come from, or what, like, I don't know if you met any challenges along the way that you'd be willing to share that you feel like other guys could learn from?
Challenges where, like fitness or just life or what?
Just life, yeah. Mostly life. Probably deeper than fitness is what I'm after here.
Maybe. Yeah, okay. I guess we're going there. No, yeah. So I actually shared this in a COT crucible a couple of weeks ago. And I picked that one specifically because the Q-Source topic was on failure. Yeah. And so the part of the story about, you know, coming over to moving to Omaha, studied, got all my licenses for financial services. You start knocking on doors. And so I've knocked on probably 15,000 doors in Omaha. I kid you not. And I've got somewhere in my file cabinets, I got all the logs.
Yeah.
I did that for 5.5, 6 years. And I hit a wall. I hit a absolute, I hated coming to work every day. I was just in a bad place for whatever reason. At that time, we had two little girls at home. My wife was very pregnant with William, my oldest boy. And I remember coming home one day when I'd finally hit my limit. I walk in the door and my wife is nursing William because it was right off the garage. And I lost it. I was just, I said, I'm done. And she came up and she hugged me and held each other for a minute. And she's like, what are we going to do? Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. I was the provider basically at that point. And, you know, you got a young family. And so at that point I had a plan. I mean, long story short, my neighbor, is with the company I'm in with now. And I was like, talked about what it is and what we do and all that sort of thing. And it was compelling because I'm like, we can do everything and I can build a team. And so I just started tiptoeing into it and we moved that way. I got hired, started, by the grace of God, I worked my tail off. I mean, my first 2 years, I just absolutely got after it. And I had a lot of success right out of the gate. The company noticed. And so some things, came into play and it's been just an unbelievable ride for the last, I've been here 13 years now. And, what people don't see was me holding my hands, you know, on my knees. Cause it was so, I told, Spokes and Milk Carton this morning, I was like, that's the lightest I've ever been, but it's not for good reasons. I mean, I couldn't eat for 6 months. I was jamming, trying to get like bites of food in. Cause my stomach was so much stress.
I was anxious. Mm-hmm. And, yeah.
Yeah. It was awful. Yeah. Yeah. So
you think, cause I do hear a lot of guys, right. And I don't know. It's funny cause I used to think it was like kind of seasonal or age based, but I think when we interviewed Da Vinci, I think he was sort of like, no, it comes back, you know? But sort of this idea of like, how can we do something that we enjoy or maybe doesn't like wear us completely down, but still provide for our family. And you know, I don't know if a guy's going through that, was there anything that you did, or maybe it's just talk to people and find out what other people do.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's the thing that someone gave me this advice. And I'm trying to think of who it was or where I read it, but I've been telling my kids this, because I have a senior in high school now who's going to, you know, pursuing that college thing. And so I tell people or tell them like, look, you don't find who you are, you choose who you are. And so if, like I said, I'm not going to send you to school for 4 years to find yourself truthfully, you probably never will. You need to choose. Like, I'm in the career that I'm in because I wanted to help people on a deep, like non-transactional level. I want to help them pursue their goals. I didn't want to have a boss looking over my shoulder every day. I wanted to have flexibility over seeing my kids play in sports and not be, you know. And then again, I've been fortunate to build. I've got five people that work for me now that are like, I couldn't do it without them. And they do all the things that I stink at. And so it was deliberate that I didn't wake up one day and have all the answers, but I learned over time, like I'm choosing the life I want to lead. And it's a lot of hard work, but it was choices. It's not like I didn't get lucky or anything like that. There's been a lot of hard days along the way.
Yeah. Yeah. I really like that idea of choose who you are, right. Yeah. And sort of pursue, you know, whatever the next right step is. I think, may have been at QSource this week at Crucible. We were talking about this idea of just like, go do, you know, take the next step, right? But then be open to maybe God trying to redirect or pivot, mm-hmm. or, but if, but spending all this time trying to like find something that may be right in front of us. I know I've definitely spun my wheels on stuff like that, and come to find out you're like, you can get really bogged down or distracted, I think, in trying to like answer those questions when the answer is really behind the next door that you just need to just go through. And, you know, so that's, yeah. I love that.
Yeah. I mean, there's some caution about like, you know, paralysis by analysis or whatever you want to call it. And then that's why I tell my daughter, if she's kind of looking at that next chapter, is just don't be afraid to fail. You are so young. Go give everything you have to something and realize, boy, that was a terrible decision.
Yeah.
Or, you know, this is the worst job I've ever had. And then learn from it. You're going to internalize those struggles and get better for it, you know?
So. Yeah. Yeah. I was telling my daughter, she wants to be an author. And I was just telling her, you know, well, I wanted to be a cardiovascular surgeon and I wanted to be, you know, I thought I was going to be a chemical engineer. And then I became a nurse and now I work in IT. So like, who knows, right?
Yeah.
Like, you just never know.
Yeah.
Where you're gonna land, you know?
Yeah. Well, my initial degree when I first went to school to like pick something, I'm like, oh, landscape architecture. I work for landscape companies. I love that stuff.
Yeah.
But I had to take art classes the first couple semesters. That first semester, I was two or three art classes, and I was looking at what I drew next to the people. I was like, teacher comes over, is like, well, that's a nice blue duck you drew.
You'd be great at it.
Yeah.
Was that your first degree? You have what's your degree in?
My degree from Iowa State is horticulture.
Okay.
I went from landscape architecture. Counselor says, you know, try horticulture because you can do landscaping, you can do golf course management. I'm like, oh, golf course management could be cool. So I was very fortunate. I got to do some neat stuff. I worked at Ridgewood Country Club in Paramus, New Jersey. They've had multiple PGA events. I got to volunteer at Shinnecock when they had the US Open. So I've been to a lot of private courses that have had some big events, and that is it's a neat industry. At the same time, it's like, gosh, I would work a lot during the summers. I'd give up a lot with the family and like having bosses. And in the private club industry, you have hundreds.
You're one
of
phone guy.
Yeah.
One phone guy.
Yeah. So, so grateful for the experiences of that, but also very grateful not to be doing that anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh man, I could talk. You have some great stories. I appreciate you sharing that. And, you know, I guess the other piece of this, right, would be the leadership piece. So, you know, trying to invigorate male community leadership. So I always love to get guys' perspectives on, you know, how are we doing that? Right. In F3, we try to give you these leadership opportunities to grow and to fail and all of that, but as you know, from a VQ perspective and then as a site Q, what was your experience?
Yeah, I mean, without a doubt, I would say the confidence. I see it in myself and I see it in guys around me. Like, you get some confidence by, you know, for one, you're feeling physically better. Yeah. Most guys, almost everybody in some way or shape or form looks better because they're stronger and that sort of thing. So there's that confidence bump just from the physical aspect of it. But, you know, the queuing thing, I remember, you know, my first one, honestly, my first one wasn't even my worst one. I butchered one at Badger. I remember because Stripes was the site queue and we got like 20 minutes in and I kind of ran out of ideas. I thought something was going to last longer than it did. And Stripes was like, hey, we're only 20 minutes in. And so, so I've had some pretty awful ones. But now I've gotten to the point where, you know, I confidently go into a queue scenario or a queue leadership role. And so that's been far better. But it's a repetition thing. I mean, the more you do those things, and I think that's a good lesson for all of us, is you can't just look in the mirror one day or you know, and say, oh, I'm a good leader today. No, mm-hmm. you mean it's the million things you did behind it that got you to that point. So,
Yeah. I love it. I was just, there's this book out there, Stephen Covey Jr., right? He's got this book called Trust and Inspire. And he goes through this whole book about this great leadership thing. And then he goes through like, here are the top barriers. And the number one barrier was you think you already are leading this way. Sort of this idea of like, you read the book and you think, oh, I do all that stuff pretty well, right? But not having the ability to sort of reflect and say, yeah, I need to adjust or make some improvements. And really always, right, as a leader, I think super important. What about being a site queue? What was your experience like there? Any advice for guys that are maybe taking the flag? Or
yeah, I mean, to me, for one, I loved it just because I love Paradise. I've just grown to love the site, the queue source, the guys that show up, in part because there's a lot of veterans that show up pretty consistently. So it's different than like a startup site out west, I think, in a way, in that I kind of just carried on a lot of what guys do. And I'll still argue that my predecessors did a better job than I did in a lot of ways. But I just loved the guys, the consistent guys that came in. I love that there were a lot of veterans. We did bring on, you know, a few guys like Corn Cob was there, Altar Boy, some younger people that were fairly consistent through the summer and things like that. That were great guys to get to know. And now obviously with Spokes taking over, he's going to take it even higher and better than where I bought it, but I loved it. Yeah.
Anything, any nuances or things that like leading a site with a book study, anything like that, that you would maybe throw out as advice for other guys?
In terms of like encouraging sites to add that aspect to it, or
could be. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I will say, you know, having, even if it's, I know Snare's done like the Truth Nugget Thursday, like
TNT,
the TNT deal, like having a topic to discuss, because I think it definitely elevates the experience when you do something physical hard and then challenge the mental side of things. I think that's so, you know, whether it's I know there's been discussions about doing like a free to lead type of thing, or, and I know QSource has been big, whatever it is that helps cultivate, you know, both the physical, but you know, also spiritual, and, you know, there's all sorts of areas, but you know, having a topic I think is great.
Yeah. It's, you know, it's funny when we launched Paradise, right? Then my initial idea was I just want to meet with guys, have coffee and a discussion. And then wait time was sort of like, we should run or do something before. And I was sort of like, yeah, sure, whatever. Well, the secret sauce, right, of like doing something physical and tough before, and then that discussion, whatever it is, right? If it's the walls come down or I don't fully understand the science behind it, but it just is such a powerful combo and that is huge.
I think and having it be hard, like I think you know, if I'd never done F3, but I got old someday and I became a mall walker with a couple of old crotchety old guys, like you could do that, but would it be what this is? Because I think it's really important for it to be really hard. That's why I like the harder beat downs and you know, why they're running, because that is hard. There's something about the stress of that, maybe is that's ignites a fuel or you know, gets the synapses fired. It's I think it's really important.
I love it. I think we could keep talking for hours, but I love just your story and just the way that you've shared. I also think just, you know, it's crazy to think back of like Paradise, right, is now on its ninth site queue, eighth or ninth site queue, right, with Spokes. And, you know, just this, all of these awesome guys that have had a chance to lead there. So just appreciate your leadership. You know, I would be curious if there's anything we maybe didn't cover or anything on your mind that you would want to share with guys that are listening.
No, I mean, other than just praying for the guys that are struggling with different things. I know cancer has riddled. I know many of us know guys that are struggling with different substance abuses, maybe troubles with their 2.0s or their M. So just, that'd be the big thing, is just keeping all those guys in our prayers. Every morning there's somebody else. And so just praying for those guys that are going through tough stuff.
Heck yeah. Well, it's kind of an interesting segue, because where we like to kind of end is where you need prayers and support and encouragement. Anything specifically on your heart we could be praying for you about?
Yeah, I mean, I have been richly blessed. I mean, I've got the greatest wife in the world. No offense to anybody else's. For me, she's been great. our kids are awesome. My family, they're just truly blessed with gifts. So, you know, the things I'm, other than battling my gesture and having to having to break up with my drive-through guy at McDonald's.
What's his first name? I know you know it. Shout out to Gary. Gary with the tomatoes at McDonald's.
Yeah, you should stop by. He's probably still got them behind the counter. That's been my Jester. That's probably the biggest one. I will say one of the things that, you know, distraction. I mentioned in the this morning we did the COT and the circle at the end and Chalupa had us bring up things that we're struggling with, and distraction's been huge. I mean, I have so many big things going on in my life, but boy, it's easy to get distracted. Yeah. Okay. Focus would be good.
I'll be praying for you on that. Okay. I won't tell you where I like to go for the best cheeseburger in town either. But
don't take my guy.
Yeah. Don't take his McDonald's guy. I love it. Well, again, really appreciate your time. And we'll do a little name-o to wrap us up here. Right. Brandon Fleherty, 39, The Plague.
The Plague. Tyler Langle, 45. Man.
And now the story, it kind of makes me nervous thinking about crashing that plane.
Yeah.
I'm so glad you're okay. But appreciate you.
Likewise.
Have a good day.
In our chest, we're not defined by the weight of the test. Brothers in step, we carry the flame. Different roads, but the heart beats the same. Every man's got a story to tell. From the valley low to the mountaintop yell. Every man's got a story inside. Standing strong, we won't hide. Every man, every man's got a story. We've been broken, we've been bruised, but we rise again and we don't get to choose. Through the fire, through the fight, every man's story burns in the night. Scars on our hands, hope in our chest. We're not defined by the weight of the test. Brothers in step, we carry the flame. Different roads, but the heart beats the same. On a story to tell, from the valley low to the mountaintop yell. Every man's got a story inside. Different roads, but the heart beats the same. Every man's got a story to tell. From the valley low to the mountaintop hill. Every man's got a story inside. Standing strong, we won't hide. Every man, every man's got a story. Every man's got a story. Voices rise like thunder, they roll. Truth in the pain, it's shaping the soul. Chains may rattle, but they break in time. Every man's story is yours and mine. From the struggle to the glory, every man's got a story. In the dark or in the light, we keep marching through the night. Every man's got a story inside. Every man's got a story to tell. From the valley low to the mountaintop hill. Every man to the mountaintop hill. Every man's got a story inside. Standing strong, we won't hide.